B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, which now smells like a Cinnabon, thanks to Chris Gasper. It is Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Let you know right off the bat here. Call in, really about anything, 617-779-0985. Because I think we've exhausted everything that we can possibly talk about with the Celtics and what feels like a bit of a desolate wasteland that they've become, unfortunately, in the last 12 months. You want to talk about the Red Sox and a walk-off win, Christian Vasquez, his second walk-off in his career, fine, have at it. I'll tell you right now, I didn't watch it. You can do Red Sox and Blue Jays on your own time.
You're unbelievable.
I'm not going to do it. Like, there's 162 games. If I had it my way, Chris, I would cut the Major League Baseball season down to, 50 games. Like, that would make it palatable.
That was a pretty good game last night. I mean, came back from 5-1. They showed a little something. I know it's the Blue Jays, but that was a really good win.
They have. They actually have shown something. I was a little bit impressed with the series win over Minnesota, but I mean, these Blue Jays games, the Orioles, this Tiger series coming up. Like, it's almost like I look at the calendar. Look, it's the job. I have to pay attention. Am I going to watch all 162? No, for my dead body at this point. I can't do it. Life's too short. But some of these series, you got to check in, at least in a few innings. It's like, oh, Jesus, all these terrible teams. You know what I did mostly watch last night, though, was the NHL draft.
Me too.
Because it's such an uncomfortable and awkward production as a whole. Going back and forth between the NHL Network, which actually does a better job than NBC Sports Network does on it. But, I don't know, you get that, half-empty stadium. They're doing it in Vancouver. The Bruins end up selecting the 6'3 center, John Beecher, who at least, if you look at the draft profile, seems to be, the perfect mix of size and speed. And maybe that's, they make this selection just simply based on the fact, they didn't have much of that size and speed against the St. Louis Blues in the Stanley Cup Finals. So, okay. That's a move towards the future. But really, only one thing more than anything else stuck out to me from last night in the NHL draft, and it was after Beecher was selected. He is interviewed by, why do I forget her name? She used to work in this market.
Catherine Tappan.
Thank you, Catherine Tappan. And she says to him, "You grew up watching Jack Eichel."
No, that's right, yeah.
And honestly, Chris, I was laying there, and I was like, what? Huh? What? It struck me to my core. It literally hurt. I know I'm old, but do you know how old Jack Eichel is? For you casual fans of the NHL, you've heard the name. He got drafted, 3 years ago now? Jack Eichel's 22 years old. 22. And John Beecher, the acquisition of the Boston Bruins last night, selected number 30 overall, was asked, "Hey, you grew up watching Jack Eichel." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, no, I watched a lot of Jack growing up." Oh my, it made me want to die. It really did. Like, getting old sucks. You get the wisdom with growing old. Yeah, and all you do is you end up getting full of regret because you're like, oh, I wish I did all these great things when I was younger, but now it's too late because I'm old and I'm getting closer to death. But you hear something like that, and you're younger than me, and Sarge, you're in your 30s, but I'm sorry, even if you're 26, that guts you. You grew up watching Jack Eichel. That was my biggest takeaway from last night. Like, oh God, I am just creeping towards death. And hearing a sentence like that come out of the mouth of Catherine Tappan, who does a hell of a job, it's like, oh God, you grew up watching a 22-year-old kid.
Well, there's a little exaggeration there, though. Yeah. Because I mean, the Beecher kid is 17, about to turn 18. So yeah. I mean, they're only 5 years apart.
But still.
But it makes a big difference, if you're 13 years old and you're excuse me, watching Jack Eichel, and he's 18 years old, then yeah, that's your idol. He was probably 12 or 13, and
it's crazy.
It is crazy. First of all, those kids, they're 17, 18 years old, so you tell it right now, they were born in 2001.
Well, the other thing, too, and, like, you know, you watch...
And they're professional athletes.
Right, and you watch this thing, too, and this is, I think, the one other constant you get with the NHL draft in recent years. Like, you can't tell the difference between who's the girlfriend, the sister, and the mom. They all kind of look the same. They all seem the same age, too. It's like, because they're kids. They're truly kids, 17, 18 years old. It's like, all right, you're getting drafted. They're going to work their way through the OHL or whatever, and, you know, some it's really, you know, a handful or less that ultimately end up going to the NHL within a year or two. But boy, like the age of them, they're literal kids. And the families, the girlfriends, you kind of can't tell them apart. I know you watched some of this last night, too. And
I did.
Like, you kind of said the same thing. It's like, I don't know who's who. They're all attractive, including these kids. They all have great hair. They're all, you know, like ready for the cameras and everything else to be stuck right in their face, microphones and everything else. And so, that was really my night in sports more than anything else. But I can't just wait for the Sports Hub Celtics show, our final one of this season, a season of what has been full of discontent, aggravation, disappointment. They have the draft a few nights back. Your overall thoughts on how this week went for the Celtics? Because after we got off the air Saturday, I was actually at dinner, and a buddy of mine showed up, and it's very rare that I'm not looking at my phone because you got to always know about the breaking news or whatever, and the lady and I are having dinner. Our friend shows up, and he's like, oh, you heard about Anthony Davis? I was like, what, huh? And he was the one to tell me that he ended up getting traded to the LA Lakers. So we haven't even really talked about that,
yeah,
even in
true.
Your spot yesterday in Felgren, Mass. Yeah. So why don't we start there with them losing out on Davis?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by that. And I think that Danny Ainge, you know, displayed the right amount of restraint. I think it would have been easy to say, okay, we're going to go all in, especially after what happened with Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors. But as I have talked about a little bit on Felgren, Mass, you know, that was a unique situation. Like, Toronto was sort of at the end of their rope, at the end of their wits in terms of being a postseason loser, and they were in a situation where they bought really low on a star who was coming off an injury, and they were doing it with a team in the Spurs that was, I think, really sort of preordained in terms of saying, like, well, we don't really want a bunch of young guys, we'll take like DeMar DeRozan. It was the polar opposite situation in New Orleans. You were paying the maximum price for a guy with a team that wanted like all your best young assets. And the other situation there was that you don't have like a Pascal Siakam. Like, as great as Leonard was, if Pascal Siakam doesn't emerge as probably the most improved player in the year, guess what? They're not winning. So it was not just one thing with Toronto. So I applaud Danny for looking at the situation and saying, look, this guy doesn't really want to be here. His agent is broadcasting that fact. The easy thing to do would be to copycat and say, yeah, we're going to go all in and get Davis for a year and win a title. When the reality is that was a really unique situation in Toronto.
I applaud him. I didn't want him to make the move. I almost felt like he was going to be, you know, forced into it.
Shamed into it?
Yeah, because of everything that happened this year with Kyrie Irving, and it does feel like it's gotten a little bit desperate here. So I was concerned because I believe the agent Rich Paul, who was essentially screaming into Danny Ainge and the collective Celtics fan base faces, he don't want to be here. So buyer beware. Yes, you'll get him for a year, but he's not going to re-sign. He's not going to re-sign, stupid. And so, you know, I applaud Danny Ainge for his prudent behavior here, because the easy thing to do, I think, or at least to get that pop and to make everyone's, you know, bad feelings about the team and this bad season, what happened with Kyrie Irving, to make that just go away like that, well, you make this deal and you trade away Jason Tatum and you get Anthony Davis and we'll figure it out later. Thankfully, he didn't do that.
Yeah, I think it was the right move. And it's particularly hard, too, just not just in sports, but in life. When there's something that you've wanted for a really long time, you know, maybe it's a coat that you see or something. Who knows? And you've wanted it for a really long time, and it's right there. It's really hard to show that restraint to say, you know what, this is a bad decision. This is not the right decision. And Anthony Davis has been the holy grail for Danny for a long time. I mean, even going back to last year, there were stories that were coming out last year, and even in the last couple of weeks, they've sort of been regurgitated about one of the reasons the Celtics did not pursue Kawhi Leonard was because they were saving their assets for Anthony Davis. They've been saving their assets for Anthony Davis. And it's disappointing that you know you have the assets to make the deal, but you're looking at it and evaluating and saying, oh, this is not a good move. This is not a wise move. And the other thing that would have killed me, Jim, I never bought for a second. Like, the idea of, well, this is a Hail Mary to convince Kyrie to come back.
Yeah.
That's absurd. Like, I'm not saying the idea of it is absurd, but if that's why you're making the deal and that's why you were going to press ahead with it, I mean, you want to talk about desperation and you want to talk about poor judgment. That would have been really poor judgment to try and make that deal and say, well, we're making it not just because we're going to get Anthony Davis for a year, but because we think it's the Hail Mary that will cause Kyrie Irving to reverse course.
How surprised were you with the change of heart from Al Horford?
Very surprised.
You know, he opts out.
Very surprised.
Then all the immediate reports were, well, don't worry about it, Celtics fans, because this just means they're going to be reworking a new deal. It's also going to be cap-friendly for the Celtics, and Al likes being here. And then later that night, I believe it was Steve Bulpet of the Boston Herald that tweeted like, no, we got problems here. Al's not going to come back here. He doesn't like the three-year deal that's been offered. There's interest from teams like Dallas, the LA Clippers, so on and so forth, and just like that, Al's out.
Yeah, I was surprised by that because I thought that if he got a new contract, you know, I thought the opt-out was basically a formality. I think the Celtics did too. It was just to give him more security, and he was going to be a big piece of this reset. Now all of a sudden, like to me, that was it. That was the one where, talk about being kicked while you're down. You know, the Celtics are already in a tough spot. Kyrie Irving doesn't want to stay. Anthony Davis doesn't want to come. But you're like, here's Al Horford, the biggest free agent signing in the history of the franchise, the guy who wanted to come here, the guy who sort of put the Celtics on the map in terms of recruiting NBA players. And now all of a sudden he wants to opt out. And then one of the teams he's being linked to is Dallas. Dallas? I mean, I love Luka Doncic as much as anybody. And I know Porzingis is coming back. But, I mean, what does that say about what Al thinks about your situation?
Yeah, so now that's where it gets problematic. I actually applauded Al when I heard that he was opting out because it's like, okay, you know, he was the consummate professional here. You know, even at times when I've been harsh on him, like the guy did everything the right way. He's a good NBA
pro. He's classy.
Yeah. I think he could help a team that's legitimately close to winning a title. Maybe that's Golden State. Maybe that's the Clippers if they get Kawhi. So, you know what? Go get your ring. I'm okay with that. But if he does go to the Dallas Mavericks, I mean, they're almost kind of in a way, in terms of the youth, a mirror image of what the Celtics now have. You have Brown and Tatum. They have Doncic and Porzingis coming off this injury. So he's going there to essentially take the Dirk Nowitzki role as the savvy veteran to bring them along. Shouldn't you do that here? Aren't you comfortable here? That's a massive slap in the face and such a tell about how he feels about what's left here. It really is.
Yeah.
If he does that, oh boy.
Like, yeah, I agree. Now, I tend to think, based on the reporting Steve Bulpet, what he tweeted out today, I think we have a little situation of Doc Rivers doing some poaching.
Yeah, so what's the latest? What was the tweet there, Sarge, that you had in the headlines?
Yeah, it's Bulpet said earlier today that it's the heavy favorite are the Clippers, especially if they do get Kawhi Leonard. And if that's not the case, then yes, the Mavericks would be like 1A.
Okay, so what do you mean by Doc trying to do some poaching?
Well, I mean, I think Doc knows what Al Horford has meant to the Celtics here, and I think he values some of the same things that the Celtics value. And there was probably, like I said, the idea of, hey, you know, why don't you come here and play with Kawhi?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, you know, sort of poaching a Celtics guy, and, you know, Lawrence Frank's out there too. So I think there's still some sort of similar attributes that both teams are looking for, and Doc has seen what Al has been able to do here, and he said, well, you know, forget what they're going to give you. We'll give you more years, more money.
Yeah, but if they get Kawhi, to me, wherever he goes, just, and I'm with you, like, look, those contributors on that Toronto team this year were actually better than expected. Siakam, the bench was good once Van Fleet and his wife had the baby.
Yeah, he was awesome once he had the baby, yeah.
Good Van Fleet. But if Kawhi goes there, or like whatever team gets him, to me, is the favorite to win the championship next year. So I don't know how much of an influence that is about Doc more than it is the Kawhi factor or anything else for Al. So I wouldn't blame him there. But Dallas, oh, God, it would just get worse for Celtics fans. So we're off and running. Like I said, whatever you'd like to discuss. You want to join the show, 617-779-0985. What is it you're eating over there that's made this place smell like an Auntie Annie's all?
Apples and cinnamon oatmeal.
Oh, it's quite delicious.
That's what I had, too.
Oh,
breakfast.
Well,
it was very good.
It's a very cinnamony studio here, as we have Gasper and Murray here, along with Sarge. You want to join us, 617-779-0985.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
First of all, I'd like to thank the city of Vancouver, the Vancouver Canucks, for their hospitality. Shout out to Maple Ridge. I'm going to have a fellow British Columbian, Dean Malcock, select our pick.
To select John Beecher.
Do you think Cam Neely was enjoying that moment last night?
Oh, how about the shout out to Maple Ridge?
Yeah.
He tried his best to mollify the folks there. And then whoever that poor guy who had to announce it was, he kind of just like you know, it was like a grenade. You just tossed it at him. You didn't even get the typical NHL thing, like the Boston Bruins are proud to select.
Yeah, yeah, no, he couldn't get off that stage.
Something fast elementary school and this, that, you know, the whole Pierre Maguire run up. He was just like, John Beecher. And then they just walked off.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. So, yeah, that was the first selection by the Bruins. Number 30, John Beecher, who at least you read up on his draft profile, the perfect mix of size and speed. Am I going to pretend to know all that much more about him? No, I'm not. Hopefully it pans out. But more than anything else, I just like the awkwardness of all things NHL awards and the NHL draft and the draft last night, too. Like, you stupid Vancouver Canuck babies. Like, get over it. You're still mad about 2011. And let's not forget, Cam Neely played for you, you idiots. And they're booing him still so lustfully like that. Like, oh, you stupid babies.
It was kind of delicious, though.
Yeah.
Those people are still that wound up about it.
Yeah, here we go.
And that they just, remember, they destroyed their own city after they lost.
Oh, God. It really, like, I can't believe that the hate still burns that deep in them. But then again, they did almost burn down that beautiful city. Something else I wanted to touch on, because it's starting to go viral this morning, at least on Twitter, is earlier in the week when you had the NHL awards in Las Vegas, where, again, Don Sweeney ended up being named General Manager of the Year. There was a great moment. The thing that like blew up the internet that night was that a Canadiens fan, Anderson Whitehead, comes on stage with Canadiens goalie Carey Price. They share a moment, and this is the same kid that, if you remember, Carey Price gave his jersey to earlier in the season. This poor kid lost his mom to cancer. It's just a horrible story. But Carey Price has done a lot for this kid, and he brings him out. They share a moment. It was truly touching and beautiful. You know, it's nice when you get these moments in sports. But further proof that, to me, I've always believed this. Hockey players, they of all the pro athletes, they're the ones that keep it real the most, for better or worse. But I just, like, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Chris, like being in locker rooms, being in clubhouses or whatever. Like, to me, it's NHL players, and then there's like a drop off to everybody else when it comes to like the most real.
They're very relatable. They come off as sort of regular guys.
Yeah, they're all like they're the most like regular type dudes, right? And here's further proof of that. So Carey Price does this wonderful thing. And as it turns out, you know, the suit he's wearing that night, as he brings this young Anderson Whitehead on the stage and they hug it out and the kid's crying and everyone gets up and gives him the rightful standing ovation. The suit he's wearing, he had forgot his pocket square. And so his wife has an explanation as to what he was actually wearing inside the little pocket in his suit.
Almost made it to 11 o'clock, but I'm in my room, going to go to bed. Carey's going to tuck me in. But I wanted to show you guys something funny. Carey had forgotten his pocket square tonight for the NHL award, so hanky panky came.
Yeah, so she holds up her thong, that she pulls it out of the pocket in the suit jacket, and that's what his pocket square was. It was his wife's black thong. Hockey players, NHL players, they keep it real. Like, that's either that or that's some real kinky stuff going on, which I applaud him for that too. So, you know, maybe he has the hug with the kid afterwards, goes backstage, pulls it up. Oh, yeah, I've done a good thing here. I love hockey players. Hey, look, this is what you get this time of year. I can't talk. I'm not going to get into the minutiae of a random Red Sox-Blue Jays game. I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. And if you want to continue to talk about the Celtics and what has just been their horrible, horrible year that seemingly gets worse by the day, and Al Horford, who wanted you and now doesn't want you, might be going to Dallas, which is almost a mirror image to the Celtics in terms of their youth. It's just a slap in the face. In fact, I keep talking about this kind of stuff, and I get like an ulcer about it. But we'll leave it to you if that's what you'd like to talk about at 617-779-0985. There are other things, too, like the David Ortiz shooting. Apparently, we don't have to talk about it anymore, though, according to the Dominican authorities, because it wasn't David Ortiz that was the target. It's unfortunate that he got shot, but no, it was his friend that has been sitting there. That's who the real target was, even though David Ortiz is the most recognizable human being from the island of the Dominican Republic. He wasn't the real target.
And the alleged target doesn't look anything like David Ortiz. It pretty much would be like if you and I were there and somebody was like, oh, Chris got shot, but Jim was the target. It's like, you're about 5 inches taller than me. You know, you're wearing the hat, the whole thing. And they're like, no, we thought it was this guy because they both were wearing shirts.
Yeah.
No, forget the color. I was told the gentleman had a shirt on, and so I just fired away.
It's amazing. And I don't think we'll ever get to the real story either. The thing is, I think there are a portion of people, and especially Red Sox fans, that they don't want to hear about their hero getting tarnished. Like, I think that is, you know, there's so many of these people that you hold up and that we collectively as a society hold up in our minds. Like, they don't want to have the image take a dent at all, which, you know, in some ways I get, but like, I don't know, are you that childish? Unless you're doing something completely horrible to women, children, animals. We know what the societal contract is, right? We know what the real horrible stuff is. Like, you want to, you know, you know when a person deserves to be a pariah. But something like this, like allegedly stepping out on your wife, okay, you made a bad judgment, and that's bad that what you did to your family, allegedly, if the story is to be believed, that was reported by the Dominican, the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
Rather, that what had actually happened and caused this was David Ortiz getting with a drug lord's wife or girlfriend, and the unfortunate repercussions were is he gets shot in the back. You know, okay, like that's something you have to figure out with your family and your wife. Like, I don't really look at that as anything all that horrifying. I would like to know what the story is here, and if he maybe had some dealings with this drug dealer in terms of business type business relationship or what was going on. I think there's more here. I would like to know it.
No, they're gonna bury it, and it's in everybody's.
It's already buried.
It's in everybody's best interest too, because I this is my opinion on this too. Is that I just don't think you can get at David Ortiz like that without somebody in a position of authority being complicit in the plot, and so. You know, I think it might be more about sort of saving face down there for the authorities and the police department and from a tourism standpoint and all that than the fact that, you know, potentially or allegedly David Ortiz might have been philandering. I think it's more about sort of the image of the island and the idea that, you know, not even David Ortiz is potentially safe down there because of corruption.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that's really what's driving this is to basically say, like, you know, there's no way that David Ortiz could be targeted down here. And, you know, he's too well loved and he would be protected. And the only reason this happened was because they thought he was somebody else, some random Dominican citizen.
Yeah. Oh, and I can understand. Look, from the official standpoint, those that run the country who, you know, David Ortiz has that much influence. Like, there's no doubt that he has a good relationship with those in power in the Dominican Republic. Like, I can understand from their standpoint that they're like, listen, we got to bury this because it looks like nobody's safe here.
Yeah, it's really a national calamity, to be honest. I mean, it is. So, and I'm sure it's embarrassing as well. So I think that's sort of driving it. And maybe if there's anything that would have potentially been embarrassing to David, that now you have agendas that collide. And that would lead David to sort of be in a situation to not push it and to not, you know, pursue it, to say, okay, this is mutually beneficial here.
Let's go to Mike in Nashua, as we were talking about Al Horford, where his destination could be this offseason, as he has opted out of his final year in his contract with the Celtics. Could it be the Dallas Mavericks? Your thoughts, Mike. Hi.
Yeah, how's it going? You know what? I have to disagree with you, man. I mean, they have Porzingis, who could be one of the best big men in the league if he comes back from his injury. And as far as Luka goes, I would take him over Tatum and Brown any day. He's been playing pro for years, and it showed last year in his first year.
Yeah, but
Horford would fit in perfect with them.
Yeah, in terms of a veteran mentor, like the role that Dirk Nowitzki has had, or at least last year, as you bring Luka Doncic along. But you're not going to win a title. Like, if Al wants to leave to win a title, that's completely understandable. To leave to go to a team that's truly not going to be able to compete, like the Celtics aren't next year, for a championship, okay, you might be a middler or a competitive team, maybe you win a round or two in the postseason, all right, then just stay here. Aren't you comfortable here? Don't you essentially have the same thing here? That's what you're going to do in Dallas.
Well, and the other thing with Dallas, you know, there's not a lot there outside of Luka and Porzingis, and Porzingis is coming off the injury, but Porzingis is also not committed there like long term. You know, he's sort of willing to basically pass up on restricted free agency and not sign a deal here to get to unrestricted free agency next year.
He's just on a year, right?
Yeah. So there's no guarantee that, you know, if you're Al, there's no guarantee that you're playing with Porzingis beyond this year. And I guess, look, hypothetically, could you say the same thing about Jaylen Brown? Yes, I get it. But Porzingis was traded there. He's in a situation where this is not the team he came into the league with. He hasn't played a game for them yet. And if he doesn't like it there, he can just bounce. So I understand that there's some things about the Mavericks that are intriguing. I'll also say this too, Jim. While there are things about the Mavericks that are intriguing, I still look at the East and think that's the easier path to the NBA Finals. I still think the West, even with the injuries in Golden State, I still think that's a more daunting path.
Agreed, because you still have Portland, who I think is kind of on the come. Oklahoma City, who I think, you know, that was kind of a disappointment for them in the postseason, but they're still going to be extremely competitive. I'm with you on that. The West is still the harder.
The West is still the more arduous path. So how long will it take for Dallas to get up to speed, you know, to get up to the point where they can win that? you know, if you're Al at 33 years old, where I think if you stay with the Celtics, you stay in the East, it's a little bit different. Now, if he's going to play with Kawhi, then to your point earlier, that's, you know, I get it. Okay. That's a much more likely situation of winning a championship. But if he leaves the Celtics and goes to Dallas, I'm sorry. Like, you know, to me, that's like the capper for just a horrendous, I can't even say offseason, basically preamble to the offseason for the Celtics. It's just sort of like the hat trick of rejection for the Celtics.
617-779-0985. If you want to join the show, you want to talk about the Celtics, the Sox, Carey Price potentially being a pervert, having his wife's thong as his pocket square in his suit at the NHL Awards while he has a nice moment with a young boy. Whatever. 617-779-0985. First, here is Mike Sarge-Riley with the Sports Hub headlines with breaking news about UConn. If you love nostalgia and you wish it was still the 1980s, well, you might like this news that Sarge has about UConn here in the Sports Hub headlines.
You're listening to Jasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
How was your week? The Celtics saw Anthony Davis become a Laker, Kyrie Irving and Al Horford say they were bailing, and the beloved Aaron Baines get traded to Phoenix. They tried to swap two picks for the fourth pick, only Atlanta did it first. Miami, run by Pat Riley, who once told Danny Ainge to shut the bleep up and manage his own team, grabbed Celtics favorite Tyler Hero exactly one pick before Boston. So they drafted two players who may be just fine. Remember when the Celtics were contenders, not just fine? That was last year. Definitely not this week.
How was your week? How was your year? ESPN's Jackie McMullen breaking down what has been an awful week for the Celtics as part of an awful last 12 months. Casper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. I was reading an article this morning on Yahoo Sports that really breaks down the events that over the last year plus, and going back to October 2017 with the Hayward ankle injury, and like how this has just all devolved. It's an article called How the Boston Celtics Shockingly Combusted, a Masterclass in NBA Volatility. By Ben Rohrbach.
Yeah, Ben's great.
Yeah, it's
a really good job.
It's a really good article, but he has this breakdown here. Let's just go through the horrid timeline, shall we? Starting in October 2017, he writes, Hayward's ankle injury and subsequent rehabilitation prevented the Celtics from reaching their ceiling. In the only 2 years, Irving was under contract. April 18, Irving's own season-ending surgery and the ensuing playoff run inflated perceptions of roles of several young Celtics, leading to friction when Irving returned. That, of course, would be Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. September 2018, Anthony Davis fired his agent and hired Clutch Sports, first leading to speculation and then confirmation he wanted to join the Lakers, not the Celtics. October of 2018. Irving committed long-term to Boston in front of a horde of season ticket holders, encouraging the Celtics to continue building with him in the picture. Just if I may editorialize here for a moment, the only person I knew in this area who doubted this at the time, sits to my left that we won, Chris Gasper. You really should take a victory lap on that. You were the only one that said something stinks here because you knew how mercurial he could be.
So I told you guys at the time, I said 9 months is a long time.
Yeah, moving on here. So to December 2018, the Sacramento Kings were actually good, I told you, severely decreasing the value of the top one protected pick the Celtics own from a perennial loser.
Take a bow on that one, because I fought you on that, and I was dead wrong. You were onto the Kings early, man.
You know, sometimes it's easier when you're removed from it, you're not talking about a team, covering a team. I could tell within the first month, I was like, oh, De'Aaron Fox can ball. This team's actually pretty decent. And they were. They were kind of a decent middler the whole year.
I mean, they were in position to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Really, they sort of faded down the stretch. They went all in. They went out and got Harrison Barnes and, you know, tried to add to their team. They were right there, and you end up with the last pick of the lottery when you thought you were going to get, you know, I mean, it was protected for number one. It would have reverted back to Philly, but you're thinking you're going to get a top five pick.
So he goes on here, January 2018. No, that would be January 2019, fool. Anthony Davis requests a trade at the very moment Irving publicly wavered in his commitment to Boston, giving the Celtics pause entering the trade deadline. May 8th, 2019. Irving all but quits on the Celtics, both in a second-round playoff collapse against Milwaukee and by immediately distancing himself from the team. May 28th of this year. The Lakers jump from the 11th spot to 4th in the draft lottery, which was just a sham.
Told you that was a disaster. Everybody's no, they could have gotten... I told you that thing was a disaster for the Celtics.
Considerably improving the competition's best trade asset and a rival offer for Anthony Davis.
Yep.
And then, just a few weeks ago, Golden State Warriors stars Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson tear their tendons, convincing opponents that Al Horford is their missing piece for a 2020 title. So keep that in mind. He goes on to write, each event bled into the other, and it tore apart Boston's chemistry. As one unnamed member of the organization suggested to Yahoo Sports, a book could be written about the team's dysfunction this season. The details may not be known, at least until Irving officially leaves in free agency, but it doesn't take an insider to see. He was the Jenga piece that toppled the franchise's carefully laid plans these past 6 years. Oh, I want that book so badly. And he's the biggest part of it. Yes, he's the Jenga piece, as the writer from Yahoo says. But it's not just him. And there's other things here. I think the inflated egos of Tatum and Brown from that playoff run a couple of seasons back, that played into it. Hayward, you know, being a shell of himself of how he played in Utah, coming back from that injury last year, that played into it. How many minutes he was given time and time again, that played into it. That Danny Ainge seemingly couldn't read the room and should have moved guys like, you know, maybe Terry Rozier before the season or at the trade deadline.
Most.
Yeah, you know, like there was a lot. Yeah, there's a lot you can second guess at this point. Let's go to Ian and Malden on the NBA draft and the Celtics draft from the other night. Go ahead, Ian.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
Murray, I'm glad to see that you survived the Melrose poop-nado there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was made aware of that from Mike and Woburn yesterday when we were in for Felger and Maz. I've seen some of the video. That is horrific. Thankfully, it's not near me at Melrose.
Insane. Yeah, I get 2 points on the Celtics. Number one, I'm not going to pretend that I know too much about these kids that they picked up. You know, I'm a tournament guy, just like most people, and I kind of recognize a few of them. They come across to me as a high character, kind of gritty guys, and you think that the Celtics kind of making a conscious effort for a culture change in the dressing room, and you know, are they kind of admitting that, hey, look, if we can't have the most talented team, maybe we could at least try to change the culture and make the team likable again, or at least get guys in here that can kind of push some of these other young guys? And my second question is, this was brought up a few years ago, but I'm kind of thinking about it now more and more, is the way that IT left with the Celtics and kind of the subsequent sort of smear campaign that he went on. Do you think that there's the view in the league amongst players that the Celtics kind of did IT dirty? And do you think that's going to keep some free agents from kind of coming this way because they kind of all remember that? He seems like a pretty well-respected guy as much as we dog on him. Do you think that there's that kind of view in the league that the Celtics kind of bailed on him the way that they did?
Good questions, Ian. We'll start with that the latter one. I tend to think so. I mean, it seemed to be an issue for Anthony Davis, or at least his dad.
It was for his dad. His dad definitely referenced it. I do think that that's the perception among players in the league, is that, you know, here's Isaiah Thomas pouring out his heart and soul. Obviously, his sister passed away, and, you know, he literally gave his hip for the Celtics to get him to the Eastern Conference Final. And look, I don't fault Danny Ainge. Like, you have a guy who's going in free agency who's injured, and you can get a better player in Kyrie. You know, it didn't work out. But I do think there is sort of that perception around the league that they did him dirty. And I think Isaiah fueled that a little bit with sort of his reaction to the situation and his retelling of how the trade call went down. And I think that is something that the Celtics have to sort of overcome a little bit. I don't think it will necessarily keep somebody from coming here at the end of the day. I think there are other factors in play right now, but I do think that's something that's discussed in the league.
And in terms of his first question, did they draft to essentially make the Celtics likable again? Maybe. We'll address that going further in our long commercial-free segment that will lead into the Sports Hub Celtics show. You want to join us? 617-779-0985. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The target was a friend of David Ortiz, on which the one he was sharing the same table. So the attack was specifically against Sixto David Fernandez, who had been visiting that establishment, especially on Sundays.
That's the Dominican Republic's version of Baghdad Bob, going back, what, like 16, 17 years, when the Iraqi diplomat and politician stood in front of the cameras and microphones saying, like, no, everything's fine. The Iraqi army still intact. Everything's fine here. Nothing to see. No. So, no, the officials in the Dominican Republic announcing this week that David Ortiz, not the target of the assassination attempt. No, it was the friend who always goes to that bar every single Sunday. The friend of David Ortiz, who looks nothing like David Ortiz. He was the target, thus the mistaken identity. But no, even though he looks nothing like him. The friend who allegedly ratted on the drug dealer, the drug lord who set this whole thing up and had it in motion for nearly 8,000 American dollars. This whole plot to kill, again, not David Ortiz, it was the friend who ratted on this drug dealer 8 years ago. Yes, the drug dealers, drug lords, notoriously known for their slow roll of these type of situations.
Oh, yes, very,
being very calm, cool, and collected.
Very circumspect, folks.
Yeah. Oh, what a crock this whole thing is. You've got to be kidding me. And look, I don't mean to like say it with say it facetiously with like a smirk on my face, but like this whole thing, like, you know, you obviously wish for the best for David Ortiz. It's a horrible situation. He didn't deserve this if he did what the Daily Mail is reporting and allegedly cheated on his wife with the girlfriend of a drug lord. Like, he didn't deserve this. But like, come on, like, what's the real story? We want the real story, and I just don't think we're ever gonna get it. I really don't. It's not in the best interest of the Dominican Republic.
No.
It's certainly not in the best interest of David Ortiz when it comes to him and his wife. And that's part of me thinks if it's not the country that's trying to save face here for their biggest and most important export in David Ortiz, it's David Ortiz and his people, his clique of friends, calling officials in the Dominican Republic and saying, like, you got to squash this story because David still has to talk to Tiffany when he comes to, and like, and he's up and back on his feet and everything. Like, he's going to end up having to have that conversation. So spin this. What's it going to cost? You got to do this for David. Hey, all right, okay, we'll take care of him. He's our.
So you think it's Ortiz's people pulling the strings?
Maybe. I think it's one of two things. It's the Dominican Republic trying to save face, like you said, which is more.
I lean more towards that.
That's me too. But I don't know. I don't think that's a stretch to think that. Like, you know, if David Ortiz has an insatiable lust for younger women or whatever, like you know, other, say he likes stepping out. You know, that's his thing. Some guys just are insatiable that way, right? Like, and that's what he likes. And now it's been uncovered. He's going to have to deal with his wife. Like, yeah, I would want to have that covered up as quickly as possible. Like, baby, like, no, here's the proof. See? I don't know what the hell you're talking about. No, I'm faithful to you. You're the one, Tiffany.
This guy with all the medals pinned on his uniform says that I wasn't doing anything.
Who are you to doubt an official general from the Dominican Republic? Did you see all those medals?
Can't you just see the father, but the husband and wife fight there? You know, I have to say, Tiffany, you've always been dismissive of my country, and I don't like it. Like, you know, you're sort of spinning it. They're turning it around, like...
So I don't know. I just the one thing I do know though, Chris, is we'll. I don't know. I don't think we'll ever really.
So you're not buying this, huh?
No, please, Frank the Tank. Go ahead. You're next here on Gaspar Murray.
Hey guys, still pissed off, Murray. I mean, it's been 10 days. I'm still pissed. I feel like a mother of four with no skills whose husband just left her for the babysitter.
Wow, there's an image.
I'm not going to crap on the pick last night by the Bruins. I mean, that's a decent pick at 30, 6'3", 210 already at 18. But he's already committed to Michigan, so he's not going to help you for at least 2 years, I would imagine. But to me, last night said a lot to me about Don Sweeney. You know, and I've mentioned it to you before that, you know, general managers at the trade deadline, at the draft, it's an opportunity for you to, you know, turn yourself from a player into a king. And he's still just a player, in my opinion. I know that the draft isn't over. They still got today and everything, so stuff can still be done. But I really want to see him get off of his ass and start moving and shaking and try to get rid of maybe Backus's contract, even if you've got to eat some of that money a little bit. And possibly, you know, I know Ty yesterday said that the Bruins are a power play team and you need Torey Krug, but you know, you've got other defensemen hopefully coming up in the pipeline. I mean, what did you draft McAvoy for? You know, just to, you know, look pretty on the defensive line? Or is he going to, you know, be your defenseman of the future? So I really want to see Sweeney get off of his ass and try to help this team now. Because if he doesn't, if they stand pat and come back with the same team, they are a first round, at best, second round exit next year. Because I just don't see him as presently constituted getting back to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Thanks for the call, Frank. And Ty Anderson, who does great coverage of the Bruins at 98.5thesportsup.com. You heard him throughout the season, especially the postseason, on these airwaves. He painted a pretty grim picture of the team going forward yesterday. I was kind of surprised. I still think the window, at least for next year, I mean, a lot of things would still have to go their way. I think you need the play that you got out of Tuukka Rask this year, and especially in the postseason, and having Halak helps. And you still have this veteran core. The clock is ticking. We know that. But I think you could still potentially make a run next year. Beyond that, I don't know. But even Ty was like, yeah, no, I think they're kind of cooked here.
Well, I mean, Cooked is strong. I would say, look, give Don Sweeney some credit for the moves he made at the trade deadline. Marcus Johansson and Charlie Coyle were a huge part of what the Bruins were able to accomplish in the postseason. I know Johansson's likely out of here, but, you know, Coyle has another year on the deal. With the Bruins, the one thing you have to factor in, and you hate to say it because you don't want to discount anything that they accomplish, but the reality is, like, the board 100% broke their way. No Tampa, no Washington, no Pittsburgh. And I know Pittsburgh wasn't as great last year as they've been in the past. But still, you didn't have to really go through any of the iron or any of the great players to get to the Stanley Cup final. And then even when you got there, and I'm not taking anything away from the Blues, but there was a lot of upheaval in the West as well. You know, no Calgary, no Winnipeg, no Nashville. So when you look at it, it was the perfect year for them, and they didn't take advantage of it. Who's to say that's going to happen again? Like, you could have the same team play the same way with a tougher road and, to Frank's point, be out in the second round.
All right. So, and by the way, I would trade Torrey Krug or at least make those phone calls. He's their best asset in terms of a trade chip.
Well, his value's never been higher than it is right now.
And I would like to see better five-on-five play. I know, look, their best attribute maybe outside of their resiliency was their power play, but you know the whistles get swallowed in the postseason, especially in the Stanley Cup final, as we saw, especially in Game 7. It ultimately won't matter. So maybe Matt Grizzly can quarterback the power play. I know that might be a big ask. You have Vaakanainen coming up through the pipeline. Like, you can't let him play and then just walk. You can't do it. I'm sorry. So that's your best trade asset. You try to get someone that can help on that second line. That's what I want to see happen with this team. And, you know, extensions in theory for McAvoy and Coyle, because those guys are going to be, you know, I think your best assets, especially on the blue line going forward.
My only other concern with the Bruins is just the way that David Krejci faded down the stretch in the playoffs. And he had such a strong year. Does he have another year like that left in him?
Yeah.
Like, that might have been it.
Right.
And
so
I don't mean
sell
I'm not,
high on
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I'm
too.
Not saying the guy's done. Like he's not going to be a quality NHL player. But in terms of, like, his prime or his peak or whatever, that might have been it right there. Like, it might be over from that regard.
Were the Celtics drafting for culture more than talent on Thursday night? We'll address that in the Sports Hub Celtics show, which starts right after the Sports Hub headlines with Sarge here on the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.